Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Welcome back to the Toolbox. It was Valentine's Day 1980. Pete Townsend got drunk, did his first line of blow, and fell in love with actress Teresa Russell at the premiere of Pink Floyd's The Wall. So he wrote a song about it and called it Teresa, but changed it at the last minute to a Greek goddess on the Toolbox.
Athena, I had no idea how much I'd need her. In peaceful times I'd hold her close and I'd feed her. My heart starts palpitating when I think my guess was wrong. I'll get along. She's just a girl.
She's a ball.
Athena, all I ever want to do is please her. My life has been so settled and she's the reason. Just one word from her and my troubles are long gone. But I think I'll get along. She's just a girl.
She's a ball.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, from the man who killed Hitler and then the Bigfoot, Larry Miller, and director Robert Krzyzkowski. With Gina Grad on news, Paul Bryan on sound effects, had a call from former Trump aide Cliff Sims, and now they considered casting his butt for the role of Bigfoot. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. Love that about you. Something just popped in my head. I'll share it with my mouth in a moment. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian. And then at the end, we have a pile of crap.
Spoiler alert.
I did, Max Pat, I'm trying to do the math here, but I think it's aired. I did a take a knee, and I did a just sort of caller-driven take a knee. People called in.
Out today.
Out today. Well, there you go. Well, that's good. It's serendipitous timing. I'll tell Gary was doing a lot of head nodding while I was talking about this subject of negotiating with oneself, and I made a little note about it, and something just reminded me of it. But you can tell Gary to go.
He's coming in.
Find that that thing. But and I'll get in a little more detail about that. First, I'll tell you about this half of the show brought to you by My Patriot Supply. Go to preparewithadam.com and stamps.com. Enter Adam and betonline.ag. Enter podcast one. So I'll tell you about negotiating with oneself, and I never really thought about it deeply, but I realized so much of our time is spent negotiating with ourselves. I think people think about negotiating with others or bosses or the powers that be, but I thought, like, how many times do you negotiate with yourself during the course of a day? Mm. Like you, I think I'd mentioned when I was talking about it, you crumple up a piece of paper, you throw it in the trash can and you miss. And then you go, all right, we'll pick it up. And then you go, well, pick it up when I get up. And then you go, pick it up now. And then another part of you goes, I'll pick it up when I walk out of the room. Why do I have to get up and go do it now? And then there's a part of you that goes, I've already wasted this much time.
Well, the time I could
just picked it up.
Negotiate. Now everyone does it with food all the time and just sort of working out and all that kind of stuff. And
do I open another bottle of wine?
Yeah, right. There's all that. There's all of that. But there's a lot. Like as you really get into it and really break it down and get into the negotiations, there's a lot of internal negotiating going on all day, every day, mm-hmm. with, I'm sure, everybody. I know I do it myself a lot. I was sort of looking at Gary. Gary was nodding a lot. The guy I was talking to was getting it. You shouldn't be negotiating that much with yourself. What you should be doing is doing the thing your first impulse was. Yeah. Go pick up that piece of paper. Go put that away or shut the lid on the whatever. Or do it or don't. Why? How many hours a week, how many minutes that add up into hours could you carve out a month for what we could put under the heading of like a self-negotiation?
Right. Justifying.
I like walk down my house and I'll walk down a hall and I'll see like something on the ground and I'll go pick that up and I'll go, I'll get it or someone else will get it. And then I'll go. If you start getting out of that self-negotiation and you just start going into the sort of the movement of whatever that means to you, whatever that thing is, which is I thought about going for a jog, I shall go for a jog. I thought about picking. For me, I wrote about in my book, it started with the coffee mug that was rolling around the floor of my Isuzu Trooper that I would take on my way out to go teach my morning boxing class. The thing would end up on the rubber floor mat on the passenger side because I didn't want it with the pedals on my side, and one with the cloth seats or whatever on the seat. And then I'd pull up my house in La Crescenta that I rented with three dudes, and I would just sit and I'd like look at it and I'd go, bring it in the house. And then I'd go, no, I'll get it later. And then I'd go, bring it in now and rinse it off. And then I'd go, no, it can stay there. We're not having a shortage of mugs. And then I'd go, well, no, if you come out the next morning with your mug, it's going to roll around. They're going to clank. You're going to like break a handle. Mm-hmm. The handle's going to break off because you're going to have ceramic on ceramic crime. And I'd go, yeah, but I'll get it. I'll come back later when I'm going out like to get dinner or something like that. I'll get it then or whatever. And then at a certain point, I just started doing things. I just went, oh, there's the mug. Doesn't belong there. Mm-hmm. Does not belong there. And I got rid of it. And I just wrote down negotiating with yourself because I thought, I just felt like it meant something.
Whether it's picking up the mugs, the symbolic mugs, or picking up a thing in the hallway or whatever, act on that first impulse because that first impulse is always the right one. It's like, oh, there's something there. Oh, that doesn't belong there. Oh, I should clean that up. Oh, I should tidy this part of my life up, whether it's physically tidying something or pulling something together.
Right. So does this sound familiar to everybody?
Yeah, sure.
Everyone just negotiate and then the people that seem very successful, the people that aren't doing a lot of internal negotiations all the time, they're just sort of going.
Getting it done.
Doing it. Whatever that thing is.
Well, and I think the most public and most popular example of that is around New Year's. You know, you're smoking, you're eating a bunch of stuff you shouldn't, you're not exercising. You know what? Come next year, it's a new me.
Right.
I really should. But a month from now.
Clean it up.
Exactly.
It's your
Why
impulse.
Not
it's
just
clean
start?
It up. Just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think we all get it over the big stuff and over the sort of broader like diet and exercise. Like, I don't feel like going to the gym, but I'll go to the gym. But there are micro negotiations going on like all day, every day.
Call that person back. You know, little things like that.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, and if you could avoid that, that would be a good thing. That's all I'm thinking about. All right, so Gary will whack that up. We'll hear a version of what I just told you. All right. I had a funny thing, which is every time we do a movie, every time we do Uppity or the Shelby Doc or whatever it is, everything needs its own like loan out corp name. And everyone always bugs me. What can we call it? What should
Uppity
we call it?
Uppity LLC.
Yeah. You got to call it something because inevitably when then you get sued by somebody, they can only just sue the loan out corp and not you. And I'm always like, God damn, how much of this life is just a waste of nothing that's done by lawyers and people are suing everybody and everything. So you go, okay. So they would call me, and at first it was like, do Natalia, do Sun Talia, do Sunny Natalia, take Molly, Molette, take Molly and Lynette's name and put them together or whatever. Just take everyone's name and just put it together. Like, leave me alone. I don't care.
So up needs to be brought to you by Brygina Productions?
Right. it'd be fine. And then at a certain point, I got so bothered, I'd go, well, Colonel Duke LaCrosse will be one of the names of the movies, and then I said, make the other one Recalculus. Oh. And
I got flagged by the local authorities?
Yes. I used to yell, that's Recalculus when I do Loveline. Let's swap out ridiculous for ricoculous. And it was one of my many just... It was a weird thing. It's like you could say it on the radio. You couldn't say cock.
You couldn't break it down why, but it's just you could gloss
Mow
over it.
You could
it,
say it's like ridiculous. And there was a time, there's so many weird rules in radio that we've all lived through, but you couldn't say dick, or you could say dick, but you could call someone a dick, but you couldn't point, you couldn't grab your dick or say my dick or something.
You could be pissed off, but not pissed on.
Right, right. All that stuff.
Could we
and
say that?
You couldn't say cock on the radio, but you could say ricoculous because it was a made-up word. And so I said, go ahead, do make it ricoculous, and then it got flagged. I guess by this...
It really did?
Yes, like by the same guys who do the vanity license plates or something, you know? And
a keyword search came up.
My last name is Nazi Bomb! Like, so... But... whatever, because we live in a bizarre, we live in a world where we just make up insane rules and then we have to follow them.
Yep.
Like anyone would ever, ricoculous is a made up word.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like profanity, maybe, but they don't know,
they
but
like
whatever
jokes.
It is. So it got flagged. So then I have to have the goddamn phone call. I was like, hey, we got a situation here, the made up loan out, whatever. So I was like, all right, so what do we got? Colonel Duke LaCrosse? Yeah, Major Duke LaCrosse. And just start picking ranks and just putting Duke LaCrosse in front
Admiral.
Of it. Let's get on with our lives here, everybody. It's such a weird, especially if you're an atheist. There's two things. If you're an atheist and you're short on time, those are the two things that will drive you nuts about our society.
I think next time just go with Sidekick Productions.
It's good.
Yeah.
Rings, sings. Rings and sings.
We're doing some hypothetical road trip soon because Larry's going to be coming in as well, talking about the Bigfoot movie. Cliff Sims, is that the right name there? He's an author and former Trump aide. He's going to be calling in a second.
He's got a book to make a lot of noise.
Team of Vipers, yes. My 500 Extraordinary Days in the Trump White House, available at Amazon. Yeah, I hear it's making a lot of noise. I don't know a ton about it, Brian. I don't know what you
All I know about any of these books is like the juicy tidbits that come out, and that's kind of what defines the books, at least in the public perception. And this one, I think the most notable one, at least early on, that I heard was Kellyanne Conway is responsible for a lot of the leaks that come out of the White House, which is insane because she's one of the president's most ardent defenders, at least publicly.
Well, but it's weird because she has with her husband. It's
and
a strange
husband,
relationship.
Are you familiar with how that works? Because her husband is very outspoken against Donald Trump and very publicly.
Oh, yeah.
It would be like if Christy,
I do remember hearing
like if
about
Christy
that.
Just tweeted like all sorts of crap about you all the time, which she does, but you know, she's private.
It's crazy, right?
It is. I don't know how that works. I don't know how. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how it works.
Well, how does it
I'd
work?
Be uncomfortable. On either side.
Well, and she even said a while back, like, I don't want to be in front of the camera. I'm a behind-the-scenes person. And I wonder how much of that she just wanted to get out of the public eye because of her husband.
I never know anything anymore. I'm now officially bewildered. Like, I don't know if everyone is Omarosa. I don't know if Omarosa is an act. I don't know if she's serious. I don't know if she's trying to sell something. I guess everybody is sort of a product now, and they're just selling something. And I don't know when people say, oh, they knew what they were doing or something. I never know if they know what they were doing.
Well, we're going to find out when we talk to Cliff.
Yeah, I don't even know what I don't know if people there's like a Roger Stone version. Mm-hmm. There's a. Oh, God, an OCC, what's it, Cortez, Ocasio,
Cortez, AOC.
Like, AOC. I don't know if she's doing a version, like a left version of it. I don't know. I feel like everyone's just working their brand and putting it out there. I can't tell what's going on anymore. Anyway, he's calling in a second, so we'll find out what he knows about being in the White House and being close to Trump. Or maybe... Is Trump with Kellyanne, is he like, I don't know, are they like professional wrestlers when they go back to the locker room and now they're just going to like sit down and have a beer, but out there they're breaking folding chairs over each other's heads?
Off the top rope.
Is that what's going on?
That's a question I have for Cliff. Is like how? Because apparently, as I understand it, Trump puts up with, like, knows about the leaking and kind of puts up with it because Kelly goes on CNN, the CNNs of the world, and like I said, ardently defends him. You know, like,
fiercely.
Yeah. So I guess that sort of public loyalty is Trump. No pun intended. Trumps all the other stuff.
Wow. All right. Well, we'll talk to Cliff in a second. It's funny. I feel like his last name is Sims. Mm-hmm. I've seen the two M's in the Sims, right?
Phil Sims.
August put that in the calendar with two M's, but that's probably what you saw.
He's a one. It. No, no, I haven't seen
the calendar. No, Phil Sims was two M's.
I feel like Sims is a more. Anyway, he's a Cliff and he's a Sims, but one of his names has an extra F that he doesn't need. No, it would be funny if he had an extra M too, like two.
Redundant
vestigial
letters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would one F make Cliff any different? I would still say Cliff.
But you could argue that for Jeff too, yeah. Except for the G guys. Yeah. Although Brian, if you were a Jeff, you'd be that guy.
Of course,
how dare you?
You'd be a G. You'd be the G Jeff guy.
The G Jeff.
I know it. I know it. My heart. Yep. I know there's no way to prove it, but I know it.
I know what I know.
And Gina knows it in her heart, and I know what I know.
Joffrey.
So just take it.
I can't argue with that. I'm not coming back.
Not Taco Bell material. My stand-up special is going to be out February 27th, and it'll be in Burbank, and we'll be showing it in Burbank and 20 other cities, by the way, but I'll be in Burbank with it. You can set up a screening in a town near you by just going to TUGG.com and set up. Oh, Cliff's on line three. Cliff?
Hey.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, appreciate you having me.
Team of Vipers, my 500 extraordinary days in the Trump White House. Tell us your daily job sort of description at the White House, Cliff.
Yeah, so my title was Director of White House Message Strategy, but essentially that boiled down to helping the president and other senior aides in the White House talk about whatever issues we were dealing with that day. So all the talking points that would go along with that stuff, any drafting of op-eds that would go out either under the president's name or others, working on speeches, recording all the president's videos with him, staffing him for media interviews if he's got somebody coming in, particularly on the TV side. And then sometimes it's Donald Trump, so it could be anything under the sun that day that he might. I mean, one day there's a part in the book where he decided he saw this New York Times article that he liked and wanted to get it framed. I happened to be the one that was there, so he said, go get this article framed in gold for me. So it was kind
of
like
that's how you know he's not lying.
Under the sun.
Yeah.
That's how you know he's not lying.
I know. It's probably the worst material for a frame because it takes away from the actual picture because it winks at
it's
you.
Opulent.
Yeah. I'm a satin black man myself, but I like my frames like I like my men.
I like gunmetal black.
So how did you get the gig, Cliff?
So Jeff Sessions was a friend of mine. I'm from Alabama, and I owned a news outlet in Alabama, covered Jeff Sessions for many years. And so he actually helped me get into the campaign. I took a leave of absence from my company and worked on the campaign the last couple of months, and then we won. And so that's how I ended up in the White House.
How surprised were you, anybody else, including Trump, that you won?
I think anybody who's being honest would say that night was pretty surprising. I mean, we did have numbers internally that showed that we were certainly trending in the right direction. And in fact, our digital operations guy, who's now the campaign manager for the reelect, Brad Parscale, he got 48 out of 50 states correct in his election models. But even in spite of that, we're like looking at all the polls just like everybody else. All of them say we're about to get slaughtered. And so it was basically like, are we geniuses and everybody else is dumb or vice versa? And I don't know if we were geniuses, but we did turn out to be right. But that the opening of the book is election night. And so you can kind of feel the energy in the room change from, pessimism to cautious optimism to euphoria, basically. And there's a moment in the book where Dave Bossie, the deputy campaign manager, looks at Trump right after he won Ohio and said, sir, you're about to win this thing. And Trump's immediate reaction was, when I get to Washington, I'm going to shove it up Kasich's you know what. So that was the first words out of his mouth when he realized he was going to be president.
What about
big to small?
What about Russia?
Yeah, I mean, having worked on the campaign, I will say I have a hard time believing that it would be possible to collude with a foreign government when we couldn't even collude with the office next door. Okay, so you know,
incompetence is the defense.
Say what?
Incompetence is the defense.
That's bald, Brian.
Well, I mean, I'm just shooting straight. I don't know if it's incompetence, but it's certainly the organization was not what perhaps others were. But you know, a lot of that stuff that they're looking at preceded my time in Trump world. Paul Manafort was gone by the time I got there. Roger Stone was gone by the time I got there. So I wasn't really there to experience what it was like to work with them. But you know, my gut says that the whole thing is nonsense. And but just like everybody else, I'm kind of waiting to see what the report comes out when Mueller's finished.
Well, you know, when you're around somebody who I think we're all sort of wired the same way, although I don't know if Trump counts in this in the wiring department. But I mean, like, you have a guy and the guy's accused of having an affair on his wife or something like that. And he denies it or whatever, but he knows they have a cell phone. The wife got hold of the cell phone. She's bringing it to her computer friend or whatever. There's a posture and a demeanor that that guy has. Uh-huh. And that guy would say things, you know, like, well, there are a lot of, you know, Kennedy screwed around on his wife. He was a great man. He was a good man. I'm not saying I did, but I'm just saying, like, there's a kind of a way you are if you're worried or if you know something that's going to happen. Have you ever picked that up regarding Russia and Trump?
No. You know, one of the hard and fast rules in the West Wing, though, one of the few, was kind of nobody talked about it because, you know, nobody wants to, you know, have some random subpoena and have to recount some conversation that is ultimately kind of a nothing burger, but, you know, you got to pay legal bills and everything that comes along with it. So there wasn't a lot of – it's one topic that just didn't really come up much, but – I would say it's kind of like everything he says publicly mirrors what he says semi-privately about it. Yeah. You know?
Interesting, and it's also interesting that it's true. And I've been through this on a smaller scale. That if you do start talking about something or whatever, and somebody finds out you're talking about it, then they can go, "We want to know what you were talking about. We want that person." And like it's more of a nuisance.
Yeah.
Really, They're allowed to do it. Yeah. Interesting. So you don't expect there's going to be a big bombshell dropping in terms of the Mueller report?
I really don't. But, you know, like I said, this is kind of one of those things where even people that work in the White House, it's almost like we're experiencing it in some ways the same way as the general public. And there's actually several scenes in the book where I point that out, that, you know, if you're sitting at your office in the middle of the day and you see some crazy chyron on the TV and you're like, oh, my gosh, what's going on in the White House? Well, chances are the vast majority of people that are in the White House are probably watching it on TV the same way you are. And the scene I paint in the book is actually when James Comey was fired. You know, I was 20 steps from the Resolute desk in the Oval Office waiting to speak to a colleague and who comes out and says, hey, I can't talk right now. I'm like, okay. Walk back across the hall to my office, which is just on the other side of the Roosevelt room, and I look up on the TV and the chyron says James Comey fired. So I'm as close as you could possibly be to the president and you know, the kind of the whole nerve center there, and even I watched that happen on television. So it's kind of a picture of what it can be like in there sometimes.
You have any questions for me about being on Celebrity Apprentice? I mean, it's always worth going.
In case you write another book.
Well, look, you're going to do some interview with some AM guy, and he's not going to...
He's not going to have that kind of perspective.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, I think the thing that you need to realize is there are a lot of Loveline fans in the White House.
Oh.
And I think you've hit, like, the age group that is there now. A lot of them were kind of came up on that. So I will say, of all the interviews I've done, this is the one I got the most texts about when people found out I was doing it. Like, oh, tell him we love him. So you got a lot of fans in there.
They're big Catherwood fans.
Yeah, the Catherine Whitty era.
Psycho Mike.
Yeah. I have 1,000 questions. Is Trump? What is? How did you leave Trump? Like, what were the terms? Were they good terms? Were there animosity? What happens if he reads this book? What's he going to think of you?
So when I left the White House, it was actually there's a reason the book's called Team of Vipers. It was a tough place to work, and everybody's going after each other, and I talk about in the book how I participated in some of that even. So there were times when I manufactured the departure of other staffers, and then there came a day when somebody manufactured my departure, and General Kelly and I didn't get along very well, so I accepted a job to be a senior advisor to the Secretary of State, and then Kelly ended up blocking that job, and so that's kind of how I ended up leaving Trump world. And the last chapter of the chapter of the book is titled Disposable, and I said, I learned the one unfailing rule of Trump world, which is if you don't share his last name, you're disposable, because all he had to do was intercede and say, hey, Cliff's my guy, let him go, he's getting out of your hair, but he's a good guy, he's for me, and he chose not to do that, and that's okay. But I think if Trump actually read the book, which he won't, he would probably, for the most part, be fine with it. I mean, it's an honest assessment. I think some things about it would be surprisingly good for some people. And then there are things in there that if you're going to write an honest book, you have to be critical. And so there are some criticisms of myself, other staff members, and of the president. His reaction is entirely based off of what the press coverage is of the book,
right?
Which is, MSNBC and CNN and others have obviously talked about a lot. He's seen me on TV a good bit, and so he had a pretty negative response, as you may have seen from his tweet.
Last question, because I know you have a heart out, if it's answerable. What is, like, if you walked around and you went, what's Adam like? It's like, he's always complaining about the traffic and about how inefficiently L.A. is run and blah, 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 blah. What would be his, like, topic? Is it the wall? Is it jobs? Is it screw MSNBC? Is it himself? Like, does he have sort of theme? Like, what would be his theme, the thing he talked about the most?
Yeah, I think there's three categories come to mind. One is his business career. That also includes The Apprentice. So at any moment, you may be, hear the story of how he had the largest flagpole on the on the west coast of the United States, and he did it just to screw with the people who were mad because he had this giant flagpole, whatever, like some kind of story about his business career.
The second
would be the news coverage of the day. He's definitely all wired into whatever is going on. So if you were there, he'd be like, Adam, what are we thinking? What are they saying out in Hollywood right now? What's the coverage like? What are they saying? So that's another one. And then a third one is the staff. Every time that we were alone, just about, he would say, what do we think about Sean Spicer? What do we think about this person or that person? So he loves to kind of the scuttlebutt of what's going on in the office. He loves that as well.
He's a gossip guy.
Jesus Christ.
No doubt.
Surreal.
I was in the Oval one day, and he said he does love gossip. And he was fascinated with what TV personalities were secretly dating, hooking up with other TV personalities. So he's like, this is a guy who loved Page Six. He's a tabloid guy coming up in New York, and so he still loves some good gossip. There's no doubt about it.
He loves some hot Morning Joe talk.
Speaking of gossip, do you think he's going to sue you? There was some gossip.
We'll see. I'm kind of sitting back and waiting to see what happens on that. All they've done is kind of tweet about it to this point, but we'll see what happens.
Team of Vipers, my 500 extraordinary days in the Trump White House. Cliff, I know you got a heart out. And Sims with one M or two?
Yep. Sims with one M.
All right, buddy. Let's go Cliff with one F then, and let's just be consistent.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Cliff.
Whoa. The chutzpah on that guy, as they say in Alabama.
Loveline fans over there. That's all I heard.
Smart guy. That's all I heard. 30 seconds in.
Hot gossip. Hot Loveline gossip going on. Jeez, I went through there with the Afghan wigs 15 years ago. No one seemed to be big fans back then.
How the worm has turned.
That's right. Let me tell you guys a very surreal and interesting, but felt very authentic to me, everything Cliff said, right?
So yeah. Nothing came as a huge surprise.
Surprises. Yeah. All right, let me tell you, we're going to play a hypothetical road trip. Oh, we have our take a knee clip. I'll tell you about my Patriot Supply first. When you take money, you save money. You have, I don't know, jumper cables in the back of your car. You have health insurance. You're preparing. Same should go for your food storage plan. You have to prepare for emergencies and disasters. Shelves go empty at supermarkets. Come on now. You have kids. You have a family now. You got to take care of yourself or take care of your family. Best way to prepare? My Patriot Supply. This week, they're offering a food kit averaging 2,000 calories a day for 4 weeks, including breakfast, lunch, and dinners. Last up to 25 years. I have one. The food's great, and it doesn't take up any space. I mean, it's literally, God, it's like a month's worth of food and something like the size of like if you'd buy an old, back in the day when you'd buy a DVD carousel or something like that, like electronics box. And they got a special. Go to the website, preparewithadam.com, save $100, get it, put the date on it, put meals on it, and just put it up on the shelf. And there you go. You are covered. Prepare with My Patriot Supply. Smart thing to do. Responsible thing to do. And just save $100. Preparewithadam.com. Save that $100. All right. Gary pulled my take a knee clip that airs today. Who was the caller on that? Do we get his name? Oh, well, maybe we'll hear it. Here we go.
I was wondering if how you found your motivation to kind of get back in the swing of things. Or what advice you would recommend I take to kind of set some goals or whatever.
Okay. I think the most important part of this whole thing is don't negotiate with yourself. And there's a lot of that, like striking deals with yourself. I've just been through this. My God, am I just getting through this? You know, I have a cold. I'm busier than I've ever been. I'm in the midst of moving and all the things that are involved with that. But I made a commitment to go out and do stand up, and I made a commitment to get my freezing cold pool every morning. And there'd be no greater time for me not to do that than now, because I'm working so much and so strung out and so pulled around, and I could easily go, okay, well, no stand up until you're done with your move, or until your cold clears up, or no going in the pool, or whatever it is. And then you find yourself negotiating. Everyone who's listening has done the negotiation with yourself. You know what I mean? Like, well, you don't have to go in every day, or what if you didn't go today, but you went twice tomorrow or whatever. And when you find yourself negotiating, stop and do whatever it is you're negotiating. I now walk through my house. Of course I walk. I see 1,000 things a day. I walk down the hall. There's some kids' junk there. There's my junks over there. I look at it. I go, oh, that's Natalia's flip-flops. And I go, I should put it in a room. Phil will eat it. Nah, he won't eat it. Where's Phil? Well, Phil's with Lynette. Well, he won't be back. I'm now negotiating. Don't negotiate. You saw the flip-flops. Go pick them up. Put them in the room. Just move. It doesn't take time. The negotiation takes time. So,
like it.
Don't negotiate with yourself. Negotiate with others. You can negotiate with others. If you want to see an action movie and your girly wants to see a rom-com, you can negotiate. And if you want Italian food and your buddy wants Vietnamese food, then you can negotiate. But don't negotiate with yourself. And don't negotiate over things that are good for you. And the time, I don't know what you could carve out a week that would be considered negotiation time. Negotiation time is lost time. And oftentimes it's negotiation with no outcome. So it's a, I shouldn't eat that donut. I really want that donut. So you're wasting time negotiating and you eat the donut. Now you've wasted the negotiation time and you've got the empty calories. If you find yourself negotiating with yourself, it almost always means it's something you should do.
All right.
But you don't want to do it. Thus, true. If you don't negotiate, or if every time you find yourself negotiating, you end up on the happy side of the negotiation, which in my case would be doing stand-up or going into the swimming pool or whatever it is. I don't mean the happy side, but I mean the positive side, the thing you don't want to do. The exercise version of, it's a little late for the gym or it's cold outside or whatever my favorite show's on. Just immediately go that direction. If you're walking down the hall of life and you see something on the floor, instead of negotiate, pick it up.
Well said.
It's a good point. You'll always win your own negotiation. You know what I mean? Like you'll never lose. Like, well, I guess I have to do this thing. You'll always win.
Yeah. And then like I always think about it. I didn't think about it when I was talking at the beginning, but the lot of negotiation and then you eat the donut, like...
Now you lost twice.
Yeah, you lost twice. All right. We have, and that was Hank from Napa, by the way. We have Robert. How do I say his last name?
Krzyzewski?
Yeah. Krzyzewski. But, we're just calling him Bob.
Much better.
All right, Krzyzewski. But Bob, we'll bring Bob in. He's the director. Larry Miller, of course. The man who killed Hitler. And now... Wait a minute. Isn't it? Let's see. The man who killed Hitler and then Bigfoot.
The Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Dylan realized that he typed it wrong on your bio, and we told him to run it in, but he felt like he ran in too many times giving you other papers. So he's like, okay, I'll just wait till the break and it'll be fine. And you still.
Gambled and lost.
Well, I thought it was the Bigfoot.
Yeah, it is.
But. I treat these bios like whatever's on them is whatever exists.
The gospel.
You know what I mean? Like if it says that Robert is 34, Bob's 34, I just assume he's 34 because it's on the thing. So
Dylan negotiated with himself.
And
his first instinct was to come in and replace the bio. Mm-hmm. Convince himself not to.
Yep, we all lost. All right, and then the Bigfoot. And... So Larry's been talking about this for a while. We'll talk about more. We'll do a hypothetical road trip as well. I got some good ones. Do that right after that.
The Corolla Drinks Wine Club is back, offering you the best deals on 3, 6, and 12 packs of Mangria. Aside from discounts on each and every bottle, with a 3-pack, you'll get a custom actual chicken shit ticket signed by the Ace Man himself. With a 6-pack, you'll get the signed ticket, plus an exclusive shirt with every shipment only available to Wine Club members. We'll kick it off with the Ace Man's definitive Taco Rankings t-shirt designed by Corolla on paper. And with the 12-pack, you'll get the ticket, 3 custom shirts, plus a special invitation for you and a guest to the Corolla Family Summer Barbecue, held at our studio and hosted by Lynette and Adam. You'll eat incredible food, meet Adam, Brian, Gina, myself, and the lackeys, and get a tour of the ACS studio. Plus, you'll get to see each and every one of Ace's cars, including the magical 935. It all goes down June 22nd and is only for you beautiful 12-pack members. So head to CorollaDrinks.com and pick your tier today.
It's time for Nicaraguan Name That Movie with Adam's buddy Oswaldo. See if you can guess which movie this famous line is from.
Hey, Dr. Johnny, you time for low, we be go company.
If you said Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom...
Hey, Dr. Jones, no time for love! We got company!
You're correct. Now, back to the show.
Wait a minute. Let me hear him say love again.
Adam's buddy, Oswaldo.
I had to work with that guy for years. I had to build things with him.
Hey, Dr. Jones, you time for love? We be go company.
Hello.
He said words he wouldn't finish. It's weird. All right. I don't know how I built things with that guy. Bob, sorry. Say your last name for me, Bob.
Kraskowski.
Kraskowski.
Yep.
All right. I don't know. It's broken up here in a real weird way.
Krasikowski.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Larry, how do you say your last name again?
Milowski.
Milowski. Larry Milowski and Kraskowski. Here, Bob is the writer and director?
Yeah.
Sorry. Of the film, and Larry's been talking about this and how much he's been in love with it for a while now. And now it is out. It's in theaters, and it's on demand now. And Sam Elliott's in this, and Ron Livingston is in this as well. How do you get a crazy titled film like this done? How do you get real actors in it? What is the process, Bob?
It took over 12 years to get the movie made, so it was a slow motion process.
You're 34. You started making this when you were in college?
My entire adult life I've been working on this one movie. I hope it was worth the 98 minutes when you actually go see it.
Larry, how did you find out about the movie?
From Bob. He called me up and I said, I'd love to. And by the way, the name of the movie may be the greatest name in the history of show business. It's called The Man Who Killed Hitler and then The Bigfoot. Now, I've been in a bunch of things, as you know, but I think that wins the blue ribbon. Yeah. And in fact, I told Bob that every interview he does for the movie, which is a lot, and it's been a lot, and it'll be a lot. It's, you know, just going to keep being a huge hit. And it's a great movie. And I don't say that because I'm in it. All right, I do. But,
Bob, how did you run everybody down? How would you contact everybody?
I mean, at a certain phase, I made a short film, and John Sayles, the legendary independent filmmaker, he was interested in that because it was super widescreen, black and white, and it used full-size puppets, and started working with him. And then Douglas Trumbull, the visual effects wizard and director, came on board, and it was just – every year, it seemed like one person would come toward the movie that kind of helped get it made.
It's just sort of, I mean, I've gone through it a little myself, but it's kind of like the ultimate all you need your kids to have. Like if there's one thing that you could instill, you know, so you want to be virtuous or honest or hardworking or smart or whatever it is, but like getting something done that's impossible, and no one would ever bother you if you didn't make this movie. No one would know if you didn't make it. Like, you would know, and it involves talking tons and tons of people into doing this thing that takes place over an extended period of time. People are used to being paid real well, not being paid so well, and working a lot of hours, and getting on an airplane and going somewhere. Like, it is – it's sort of the ultimate – quality, because it involves all of the qualities, right? Like, you have to be industrious, you have to be smart, but you have to be stick-to-itness, and you have to be creative, and engaging. You have to be relentless and engaging and compelling. And
I don't think you think you're any of those things when you're doing it, because people just keep telling you no over and over again, but you just keep doing it. And my girlfriend, who became my wife, she kept, whenever I'd hit the mat, she'd say, climb back up the ropes, try one more time. And it was always that one more time that some other really great person would come near the movie, and that kind of culminated with Sam and Larry and this incredible cast of people that wanted to make this movie with this title.
It is out. It's in limited now and on demand. Where do we go to find it?
Yeah, if it's playing in a movie theater near you, all the filmmakers would love it if you went and saw it in a movie theater. But if you can't get out, or there's a snowstorm or whatever happens, you can watch it on demand on all the various streaming services.
By the way, there's just I just want to add that it's like all of show business in terms of that thing. How do you get a movie made? How do you do anything? Well, all things from show business that we all love and that everyone listening loves didn't just happen. Someone had to keep throwing it at the wall. You don't just say, well, it's a show about outer space, and they go to different planets. All right, now the name is Star Trek. How would you know that?
Pass.
Yeah, I know. I don't think people quite know that about show business, because I think they think there's way too many, oh, it's all who you know, or it's about timing, or right place, or right time, or most of it's nepotism, you know what I mean? And it's like, so much of it is just relentless. Every story is about just some crazy, you know, you get Brian Grazer in here and he just tells you a story about being just obnoxiously relentless about everything all the time. Like, never stop asking questions. Never stop getting in front of these people. Like, never. You have to. If the deal was you just pack it up and go home, if it doesn't work out, there'd be no show business. Mm. Every stand-up comedian stinks at the beginning. Why would you go back? You know, why would you keep going back?
That's the point. And you know, and everyone listening, again, knows that how many bad movies there have been that were made because some guy's uncle was the head of development at a studio. And then you see the movie or your friend sees it and you realize it's an awful movie. It's just as bad as things could be. And this one is terrific. And I am happy to be in it. And I'm happy I met Bob. He wrote and directed a great movie.
Are you ready to play the hypothetical road trip?
Do you see fear in my eyes?
No, I don't. I see. I've never seen you more confident. And it's probably because of the movie.
Because, yes. Yes, exactly. And also, I know that something that either from Gina or Brian, there'll be something in the fridge after the show.
Yeah. But I saw you after your arc on the Gilmore Girls a few years back, and you didn't you didn't exude this kind of confidence.
I told you before, I lost a bet and I had to do it.
Well, either way, this is the new Larry Miller.
Yeah, you're going to school Bob. You brought someone here to show them how it's done.
And that's why Hypothetical Road Trip is a perfect lesson.
Right.
It's a perfect way to say, this is what it's about, and not just on Adam's show.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right, here we go.
It's the Hypothetical Road Trip game. The game where there are no wrong answers.
We're driving to Florida!
All right. First one, and remember, there are no wrong answers here. Humanities student.
We'll set the table. Who's driving?
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
We have a new guest.
I forgot. This is Santa Monica Pier to the Epcot Center, and this is the person, Florida. This person is going to be with you on that journey, and you got to pick the right one.
Right.
But there are no wrong answers.
Well, that's why. Yeah.
Right.
That's because of the affection.
Humanities student with a pierced septum. I think that's that
the nose
one. Yeah. Or 60-year-old guy with the rat tail. The guy, little pony rat tail. He's balding. He's everything else, but he's got that
in the back.
Rat tail he's been cultivating for a number of years. Larry?
Well, frankly, I had hoped to get something a little tougher for Bob's first look at the game, but this is easy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I would always, I don't want to go, first of all, I don't want to drive anywhere, a block or two, with someone who's a student in the humanities and has a deviated septum.
No, it's a piercing.
A septum ring like a bull has, you know, like those rings in the middle.
You know what? I'll be deviating that for him after just a couple of blocks. I don't want that. I'll always take the old man with the ponytail, the little stubby ponytail. What do you think, Bob?
Mm-hmm. I would go with the older guy with the rat tail. Mm. I think he'd stop at some fun places along the way.
I was wrong.
Hey!
I was wrong.
Hey! What are you talking? Come on! This is his first time. Show them how well you look at your guests.
Yeah, the old guy. First off, the old guy smells weird. You know what I mean? That guy
doesn't make a habit of washing that back there.
He's got a weird, and he's also, you know, he's got, if you ever get pulled over, he's the guy where you go, just be quiet, and he starts getting a little mouthy, like, hey, nobody's robbing any banks. You got to get some dudes going 67 miles an hour.
Reminds the cops that we pay a salary.
Right. That's right.
You know what?
He doesn't like that.
As usual, I learned something from these rounds.
All right.
I'm never sure what it is, but I always learn something. But Bob will pick the right answer.
I'll let
here.
Bob try one.
Yes.
Okay. Let's let Bob just try one. Guy who swears by the sitcom Young Sheldon.
Okay.
Or guy who takes his bike down to Sturgis every year takes his fully dressed hog down to Sturgis every year.
Well, what do you think, Bob?
I'm going with the guy that takes his bike to Sturgis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I knew I was right.
You did really well for your first time.
That was terrific.
Wow.
I had no doubt.
Yeah, Larry.
Well, you know what?
He's been struggling. What? I don't know how you have to call it what it is.
You can call it struggling, but I call it inventive because the choices I make are the ones that not everyone would do. But Bob just picked a great one. I might have gone the other way, but he was right the first time.
Right out of the gate.
Good job.
Right. Well,
nailed it.
It is doable. Is
now
what
you
I'm,
see.
I'm
yeah,
saying.
It
I, think,
done.
I think sometimes Larry suggests he doesn't say it out loud, but he sort of suggests, and you would infer that it's rigged or it's not doable, and anyone can like there are no right answers, and obviously Bob just proved there are.
Yeah, this is the most right proud there. Of myself I've been in weeks.
All right,
let's let Larry get back on the horse.
Guy, here you go, Larry. Yes, this is a show businessy kind of one, so I feel like this would be good.
By the way, watch this now. Because Bob just showed you that this can be done.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm ready to show you that I can do it.
Can't wait.
Well, here we go. Guy who's obsessed with the Big Lebowski, or guy who's obsessed with Monty Python.
Very, very subtle and very interesting.
Yes.
Because they both have things to recommend them, but I would never go... Even though it's an American movie, I would never go with the guy who's obsessed with the Big Lebowski because he's then someone who's just prone to being obsessed. I would go with someone who loves Monty Python so much he knows every single moment from it, and he could tell me about certain things that even I didn't remember. So he and I would bring England and America closer together.
Come on!
I'm
sorry.
Come on!
Compelling argument.
Like, that parent it sounded is good. You know, and he would just keep doing that crazy high falsetto cockney thing about the dead parrot, and he just keep doing, you know, just kicking a dead parrot, you know. It never ends. It never ends. The Big Lebowski, you know, has a, you know, you guys probably not even make it to Arizona by the time he was done with that. There's such a crazy body of work. You have the TV show. You got all the movies. And they just keep going. Bring out your dead. I'm not dead. You know, super high voice. It's super obnoxious.
You'd walk into a restaurant. He'd be doing a funny walk.
Yeah, a funny walk. Yeah.
Well, you know what? As usual, you're wrong.
All right, let me see.
Bob take a swing at the next one? I mean, he's basic futility.
Well, what are the odds?
I would have picked the Big Lebowski guy, by the way.
Well, in retrospect, sure.
Right, sure.
Now that I know I won.
It's not so easy when you're... No. Well, show them. It's not so easy when you've been asked the question.
All right, well, try one.
I'll get one wrong then.
Bob, you try one now.
All right.
College grad who's nostalgic about the days when the internet wasn't so corporate. Or...
Specific.
Guy who strongly feels the Netflix... Fire Doc is better than the Hulu Doc.
It's like I know that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really want to ride with either of those guys.
That wasn't none of the above.
I can skip the trip.
Well, I never. It's on the paper. I don't say it.
Wow.
But that is true. None of the above was the correct answer.
See, you know, I didn't want to go with either of them.
He's got a gift.
It's amazing, right?
Touched by God.
Wow.
Right. I'll tell you what, Bob. Let's really put it to the test.
All right.
I'm just going to think the correct answer on this next one, and I want you to think the correct answer on it, and let's just see if that works. You got it.
Wow.
You got it.
And I thought it.
I didn't even have to verbalize. Wow. I didn't have to verbalize.
Come on, this is...
Oh, Larry, you try. We'll try. I'll just think that.
All right. Yeah, that's a good way to go. I am very confident. Okay, here we go.
Here we go. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Come on!
Not right. I don't know what you want me to do. I'm just calling it. I do it as I see it, that's all.
That's because you just projected the image of the old guy with the rat tail again.
Sorry, Larry. Next time you play the hypothetical road trip game.
All right, let me tell you about stamps.com. Postage rates going up again. Save 5 cents off of every first-class stamp and up to 40% off of priority mail with stamps.com. Never overpay or underpay again. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package with your computer or printer We use it here. You see why over 700,000 small businesses use Stamps.com. Right now, we have a special offer. It's a four-week trial, plus postage and digital scale. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Adam. That is Stamps.com. Click on the microphone, top of the homepage. You type in Adam. They got special offer. They have the scale. They got the digital scale. I think it goes up to 80 pounds, a four-week trial, and the postage, all by going to Stamps.com, and you just click in Adam. All right. Let's see. Larry, Bobby, you guys going to stick around for news, right? Yeah? Okay. Looking at Max Patter there. All right. We'll take a quickie break. We'll come back. And we'll do the news.
Spend Tuesdays with Dr. Drew.
Hey, I'd like to suggest you listen to the Dr. Drew podcast. It comes out every Tuesday, and it is my chance to, I love doing it, it's my chance to really dig into people and find out what makes them tick, what's going on. It's a long form where we can get into material and topics that I just can't get into anywhere else, and it's a privilege to be able to spend that time really getting in deep. So please join me on the Dr. Drew podcast.
The Dr. Drew podcast, every Tuesday on Corolla Digital and Podcast One.